Court will proceed to the second case of the day, J.P. Morgan Chase versus Inda Kiar Pope. Mr. Ramsdell, good morning.
May it please the court, good morning. My name is Thomas Ramsdell, and I'm here on behalf of the defendants and appellants, Asia Pulp, Inda Kiat, and Tijiwi Kamia. I will call those APP, IK, and IT as we did in the briefs. This court arises on appeal from summary judgment entered against the defendants on their affirmative defenses and APP's counterclaim in an order entered by Judge Holderman. This court is well aware of the fact that summary judgment is not about preventing parties from telling their side of the story when there in fact is a story to tell. And submitted to the court were numerous declarations, specifically those of Mr. Tua Manoha and Mr. Prutzman, as well as depositions of about a half a dozen individuals, all of which contained evidence that when construed in favor of a non-moving party, in this case the defendants, showing that there are material fact issues that should go to a jury. If ever there was a case that has a story and should go to a jury, this is one of them. The history of this is fairly complex, but I'm going to summarize it. In 1995 or 1996, a huge paper company called APP, one of the largest in Southeast Asia, contracted or was approached by a company called Beloit to provide it with two papermaking machines. For the court's reference, these machines are 200 meters long. They are several stories high, and they make paper. The company, Beloit, had not been in the Asian market before and sought, for obvious reasons of economic boom, to do so. And so they approached APP and told them, "We make the best paper machines in the world. And we can make paper machines that meet the caliber, the type, design, and specifications that you need for your fine paper." APP talked to other providers of machines and decided, based upon Beloit's representation of its skill, its expertise, and experience, to purchase these two machines. And the total price tag on these is about $250 million. The contracts were signed, and in 1998, Beloit is coming to the point where it's going to actually begin installing these machines in Indonesia and Southeast Asia. At the time, Beloit was supposed to be responsible for all the financing of these machines. They're expensive to make, except for 15%, which APP had to pay as a down payment, and it did. At the time, there was a company called U.S. Export-Import Financing. This is a company that was, according to Beloit, supposed to provide another round of financing for the actual installation. It was supposed to begin in January of 1998. The installation was delayed because Beloit was having financing troubles and its sub-suppliers were demanding large down payments. So what happens is the delay is going on, APP isn't getting its $250 million machines, and Beloit and First National Bank of Chicago, then Bank One, and then J.P. Morgan Chase, I'll refer to them interchangeably as the parties do in the briefs, come together and approach APP. This is not a situation where Beloit and APP are trying to figure out the financing and go out looking. That would be a different scenario. In this case, Beloit and the bank approach APP. The bank is in on this in terms of trying to work this financing from the very beginning. And the testimony in the record from Mr. John Gianto and Mr. Tua Manoha is that is because Bank One, First National, wanted to get involved in these deals and in future deals with these two huge companies. So they come, and while the Beloit is waiting on the export-import financing to come through, say, "Listen, we can arrange this," and this comes from the direct testimony, "we can arrange this so that you provide us with these promissory notes and we can go out and find financing. This will be bridge or interim financing." And in fact, that never happens. But that's what we were told. That's what AP&P was told. And I know the district court took some issue with that, but that is not the question for the trial court to have resolved on summary judgment. There was much evidence in the record on that. Time goes on, and in 1998, the machines begin being installed. By the year 2000, they're still not working. But Beloit has been on site, and I'm going to talk about this a little bit further. Beloit's been on site trying to make them work, and I think misrepresentation through silence that they could fix these problems, that they could make these work as contracted for, they never did. So in 2000, a settlement agreement is signed, as the court is aware, and that settlement agreement relates to Beloit's and APP's dispute over these non-functioning machines, and specifically carves out the repayment by APP on the notes. Before I get to the merits of the defenses, I'll finish by saying, in 2002, APP had to go out and pay $2 million to a company called Metso to come in and try to re-engineer these machines, fix the roller problems. They couldn't do it. And right now, it's entertaining two estimates of $50 million per machine to get them to work as was originally contracted for 15 years ago. So that's a story that should not have been taken away from the jury. There are six depositions, at least, and two affidavits that establish the facts of that story. I want to quickly go through the affirmative defenses, and we can look at the first, second, and fourth together.
Perhaps, Mr. Ramsell, just you might take a moment before you get to that and speak to the challenge to the jurisdiction of the court.
We think that is a hyper-technical challenge that is simply based on an oversight of one figure. Rule 3, the Federal Rules of Appellate Procedure, require that you identify with specificity the orders appealed from. Our notice of appeal identifies the October 14, 09 order, granting summary judgment, we'll say on the merits or substantial, the April 21st, granting it on the damages issue, and then the September 13 order, which was a final appealable order, which amended that judgment. The only words that are just simply mistyped is the figure amount. But it says damages in the total amount of 32, and in fact that should have been closer to 53 or 54. But the total amount is cited. The order is cited. Jurisdiction is clearly proper, and we think that's hypothetical. The first, second, and fourth affirmative defenses the court found were barred by the most strained reading of the settlement release possible. Paragraph 10 contains three different paragraphs. One is Beloit releasing APP except for the notes, and that is made by a reference to paragraph or clause 10C. B is APP releasing Beloit, and 10C is in fact the specific carve-out of APP's responsibility from their obligations to pay on these notes. Now, under any plain and ordinary reading of this, the parties clearly contemplated and intended that the issue of repayment of the notes be set aside. And with the issue of repayment, of course, that's carved out would be any defenses that APP, IK, or IT might have. There is no claim in ordinary language in this release at all that says that any claims or defenses of APP on the note issue are waived or released. The judge found that these somehow pertain to the notes and thought that 10C would be superfluous otherwise, but 10C clearly states, I mean, it's the only part that specifically carves out the obligation on the notes. It would strain credulity for APP to say, we agree to not release the notes, we'll repay the notes, but we'll release any defenses we might have if that issue comes up down the road. And I wanted to point out as well that in November of that same year, 2000, there was a slight amendment to the deed of settlement, which said, you know, basically said to be perfectly clear for avoidance of any doubt. So these parties were being very careful. This was not superfluous. This was a very careful carve out of the notes. And on that ground, pretty much alone, Judge Halderman found that first, second, and fourth were released. That is a strained reading.
Those affirmative defenses are contract-based defenses, warranty defenses that go to the underlying contract, the issue of the notes. And I think
that's what
Judge Halderman's ruling was based on. Nobody's disagreeing that the repayment to the notes was carved out from the settlement agreement.
But what he's saying is that these defenses that we have raised, that we have, that what he's saying is the defenses that we raised were barred. If we can show that these breaches existed, and I understand what you're saying in terms of going to the original contracts.
Right. The defenses in, what is it, the first, second, and fourth affirmative defenses all are contract-based defenses that relate to the underlying contract. They have to do with warranties of fitness and merchantability, et cetera.
Okay.
Those are clearly given up in the settlement agreement.
As between Beloit and APP, yes, but there would still be a defense to payment on the notes, is our position.
Oh,
if the machines don't work.
Bootstrapping.
The second issue we have with this is that the agreement does not exclude, even if the agreement is read to construe the defendants, APP cannot contract away rights it did not know existed. And these have to do with the misrepresentations relating to skill and experience. And so we can tie that argument with respect to the alternative defense or the alternative argument on counts one.
Right, but the district court dealt with those on the merits as opposed to in reliance on the settlement agreement.
Correct.
So affirmative defenses, the district court dealt with on the merits and found that there was insufficient evidence. And it's my understanding that those essentially rest on a single statement in the affidavit of Mr. Is it Tua?
I pronounce it Tua Manoha.
Okay.
But I may be wrong.
I'll defer to you on that. But it's essentially this item number 7 in his declaration, which says that he was present when these contracts were negotiated, and Beloit represented that they had machineries which were the best in the world, which is not actionable as a matter of law, as you know, a statement of opinion puffery, and had experience in supplying the machines, supervising installation, and providing maintenance services. And that's sort of a generalized statement that it's hard to premise a fraud claim on because it's so generic and nonspecific.
I agree with you on the best machines in the world is not exactly the most specific comment ever.
Take that off the table. That's not actionable.
For purpose of this argument, what they said is we have the skill and experience, and it's not just Tua Manoha, Your Honor, by the way. Mr. Prutzman also, who was with Beloit, and then came over to IKIT to help keep these machines running. There's actually two affidavits, and you know this is the problem with Judge Holderman's ruling: is he was weighing credibility and he was sifting facts. When instead of saying this is a question for the jury, and here's the question for the jury, Your Honor, which is when you tell a company that you have experience and skill in designing the machines that you're contracted for, and you in fact don't. And then you don't design a machine, which, according to Prutzman, you design a machine that you know isn't going to work because the dryer rollers are too small. Then the question becomes, were they, in fact, defrauding with the motive of getting into the Asian market and making money, of course? Are you defrauding APP? It's a much more detailed story based on those declarations.
Well, no, the declaration is very general. It doesn't say that they represented they had the precise experience in designing and building and supervising the installation of the precise machines to the specifications that the Asian buyer was looking for. It's a generalized statement that they have experience in papermaking machines.
No, they said, Your Honor, with all due respect, according to the declaration, that we can build a machine. We have the skill and experience to build the machines that we have contracted for.
That's not what it says. And that's why Judge Holderman found it insufficient. It's a very generalized statement saying we have experience in supplying the machines, supervising the installation, providing maintenance services. We have, machineries that are the best in the world. This is all non-actionable as a fraud claim.
But then you have the Beloit employee at the time of these discussions saying that Beloit had, in fact, never designed or manufactured machines. This is Prutzman. Never designed or manufactured machines of the caliber, type, and high level of specification that APP required. So on the one hand, they're saying
right.
We have the skill and experience to build paper machines.
We have this skill and experience to build paper machines. Maybe they didn't have the requisite skill and experience in hindsight, as it turns out.
Mr.
Prutzman, representation that you're basing your fraud claim on is very general. We're experienced in building paper machines.
Mr. Prutzman, combined with Mr. Tumaneha, present issues to the jury that should be resolved by the trial, which is they say they can do it and they can't. And the proof of the pudding is it still isn't working. Mr. Putzman is very clear that Beloit at the time never had made a machine, designed or manufactured machine of the caliber, type, and high level of specification. That is the sort of information which Beloit obviously did not communicate. Misrepresentation can be through silence as well. And sometimes that's even more devastating because you don't know what they haven't said. And I think that that's a fair question for the jury to decide on this. I only have a minute here or so left. So if I might just deal with the bank question and the fact that should go to the jury in this issue about paying back the notes in my limited time is that Bank One was at the table. There is evidence from a number of Mr. Tua Manoha, Mr. John Gianto, Mr. Buen Toro, that they were told this was temporary and that this was only meant to bridge the time between when the EXIM financing was supposed to come in place, and that's the end. And Judge Holderman focused on the fact that, indeed, APP made repayments of three of them. The fact that APP made repayments does not mean that there wasn't this oral agreement that they felt obligated to do. They could have done it for a number of reasons, including trying to keep this stalled, dysfunctional project moving towards completion. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ranto. Mr. Crowley.
Good morning, Your Honors. James Crowley, on behalf of the Appellee, JPM Morgan. For simplicity purposes, I'll reference it to JPM Morgan rather than First Chicago. We believe this is a fairly straightforward contract action case. That being said, there are issues of fact that were somewhat glossed over by counsel, and we think it's important that the courts recognize the timing issues that are present here in connection with this contract action. As the courts are aware, Judge Holderman reviewed all of the pleadings and in effect found that IK and TK are each separately liable to the bank under the terms of the September 24, 1998 notes for the full amounts due, plus interest, plus attorney's fees and costs, and that APP is liable under its guarantees of each of those notes for the full amounts due as well. The facts, though, are somewhat important to recognize. In 1995, APP met with Beloit regarding initiating discussions to manufacture these machines. In July 10, 1996, APP and Beloit Asia Pacific entered into two contracts for the sale and purchase of PPM-3 and MPM-11, the machines at issue here. On May 12, 1997, IK, or India Kiat, and Tajiwa Kimia signed, assumed APP's obligations under those contracts, such that under Indy Kiat agreed to purchase the MPM-3 machine and Tajiwa Kimia agreed to purchase the MPM-11 machine. So it's important that originally APP was the original party purchasing, assigned its rights over to its subsidiary corporations. These are admitted facts by the defendants in their statement of facts to Bank's motion for summary judgment. What's also should be pointed out here is the district court did not necessarily mention in its ruling, although it does refer to Mr. Prutzman. It's important, as counsel pointed out, Robert Prutzman was an employee of Beloit. And he was an employee of Beloit until 1997. In 1997, Mr. Prutzman was hired by Tajiwa Kimia to assist in the manufacture and to assist them when the installation of the MPM-3 machine, or the, I'm sorry, MPM-11 machine was being constructed, and also worked for the APP corporations as well in connection with, we believe, the PPM-3 machines as well. So in 1997, Mr. Prutzman was working for the APP group. Therefore, he was aware of any defects in the machinery as they were being manufactured. It's also important to recognize that the machines didn't go online. One machine did not go online, Your Honor, until May 12, 1998, the MPM 11 machine first went online. It wasn't until October 1998 that the PPM 3 machine went online. So for at least a year to a year and a half, Mr. Prutzman was working for APP Group and recognized issues, or if there were any, defects in the machines. Also recognized the matters which Judge Holderman points out in his ruling. The statement made by Mr. Prutzman that at no time did Beloit have experience in manufacturing these machines. Well, Mr. Prutzman would have been aware of this in 1997, in 1998, in 1999, and 2000. And therefore, his employers, the Tajiri Kamiya or APP, would have been aware of these statements, as well, this issue as well. And therefore, when the deed of settlement was signed, this was an issue that the APP group was aware of, and therefore could be waived under the deed of settlement. And we believe, contrary to what Judge Holderman said, stated in his ruling, we believe that this court should consider. Not only was Judge Holderman correct in striking the first, second, and fourth affirmative defenses based on the deed of settlement, but we believe, in addition to the manner set forth by Judge Holderman in his ruling, this court can dismiss the third affirmative defenses because the IKTK had knowledge of defects in the machinery as early as 1998, 1999, and also the fact that Beloit had allegedly never prepared, built, or designed machines of this type, because they would have had that knowledge through Mr. Prutzman.
Is the language of Clause 10B broad enough to cover fraud claims?
We believe it is, Your Honor. We believe the language is broad enough to cover fraud claims because it covers any and all causes of action or claims, Your Honor. All claims or rights against them arising in connection with the disputed contracts, and we believe that that is broad enough, Your Honor. There is further no dispute. Defendants admit that they signed the September 24th, 1998 notes and the credit agreement, that those documents were signed over to J.P. Morgan. They also admit that they made payments on those notes in 1998, in 1999, and the first installment due in 2000. There is nothing in the record that states that they never made payments to the bank during that time period because of defects in the machinery or withheld payments based on defects in the machinery. What is important to recognize is that in March 2001, Ferry Gianto, and I apologize for the pronunciation, the attorney for APP, sent a standstill letter to the creditors of Indikiat, Tijiwa Kimia, and APP, which included J.P. Morgan, informing them that APP had announced a standstill on payments of interest and principal due on APP outstanding debt, as well as debt and obligations of its subsidiary corporations, which included Indikiat and Tajiwa Kimia. Thereafter, the defendants failed to make the payments to J.P. Morgan on the notes.
What was the reason for the standstill letter?
Because they were going through a restructure agreement. And we've attached that document as part of our motion for summary judgment.
Because the APP entities were going through
restructure? Because the APP entities were going through a restructure in Indonesia.
Okay. Not because of non-performance or failure of the machines to comply with the contract.
Exactly. And I was about to point that out. The letter, the standstill letter that is attached to the exhibit as an exhibit and which was sent to J.P. Morgan does not state in there that payments are being withheld because of defects in the machinery. In fact, There's nowhere in the record does it establish that J.P. Morgan was ever put on notice of any defect in the machineries or a decision by the Indikiat Tijima Kimia or APP to withhold payments due under those notes because of defects in the machinery at any time after April 24th, 1998, through the date of the standstill letter. And I state April 24th, 1998, because that's the note was signed April 25th, 1998. And as the law holds, J.P. Morgan have to be aware of these defects prior to the notes being signed. And there's no evidence we were aware of any defects in the machinery prior to the notes being signed. Counsel's raised in their response to the motion for summary judgment, excuse me, that the bank was somehow aware or made aware of a possible defect in the machinery in March 1998 in a meeting that was held with Mr. McGonigal from the bank present. But if a review of the affidavit of the parties on behalf of APP clearly state that they're not aware of what was said at the meeting, who was in attendance at the meeting, and whether these issues were even raised at that meeting. It's also important to note that the machines weren't even online until May 1998 and October 1998, and as set forth in the affidavits declarations we've attached, deposition transcripts we've attached, they've admitted they wouldn't know of these defects in the machines until the machines went online. And therefore, we think, Your Honor, and I see my time is running out, we think that Judge Holderman made a finding striking all seven affirmative defenses, as well as the counterclaim raised by APP, based on the language of the deed of settlement, based on the fact that the affidavits or declarations that they attached in response to the bank's motion failed to set forth sufficient causes of action to defeat or sufficient evidence to defeat the bank's motion, and also the bank's petition for attorney's fees and costs for property. Thank you,
Mr. Crowley. Mr. Ramsdell, your time had expired, but you may have an additional minute.
I guess the highlight of this summary of this discussion is a discussion of consideration of these depositions and these affidavits submitted by one side and these affidavits and these depositions submitted by another. It is that weighing, that sifting, that is the role of the jury in this case. And I will remind the court that APP cannot contract away rights that it did not know it had. And these affirmative defenses that are particularly on the fraud, the special purpose, and the lack of consideration. We haven't talked about consideration. But the plaintiffs have offered not a shred of evidence, not one piece, of how APP benefited from this deal and how Beloit had suffered some detriment. There is language in the contract that says, this to the effect that for value received, but that creates a presumption. The presumption is clearly rebutted here by evidence in the record that APP received nothing, no money from the bank. And Beloit suffered no detriment. There was a complete lack of consideration on those deals. And that alone, I think, is an issue that should that affirmative defense should go to the jury. I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Ramsdell. Thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement.